The title of this workshop is Atheists and Agnostics Ease on Down the Road of Happy Destiny. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Each speaker will share for approximately 15 minutes, after which the meeting will be open for questions. Please keep in mind that this is not a sharing meeting, but one in which questions may be asked of the speakers relating to the topic of this workshop. Because this workshop is being recorded, if a microphone is accessible within the room, please use it, identifying yourself and stating your question. If you wish to share in a general way, please avail yourselves of the marathon meetings taking place throughout the course of the roundup in the Highland Room. I'd like now to introduce our first speaker, Kit Winter.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Kit, and I'm an alcoholic. So, I think it's symptomatic of the issues that atheists and agnostics face in 12-step programs that the script has us saying, welcome to the Atheists and Agnostics workshop. Please join us in the Serenity Prayer. And I run across that a lot. A little bit about me. I've been sober for a little over 7 years now, but I first came into the rooms of Alcoholic Anonymous probably closer to 20 years ago, and it's possible that I was too young to hear the message and just not done with my drinking and drug using, but my recollection is that I was very uncomfortable with the God talk in the room, and this was in New York 20 years ago, and it was the Lord's Prayer, and people would talk about Jesus in meetings, and I was raised with no religion at all, and I was just very uncomfortable. I felt I was being asked to, notwithstanding, you know, God as you understand him, I felt like I was being asked to profess a belief in something that I didn't believe in, and I wasn't comfortable with that. And so my sobriety didn't stick at that time, and then 7 or so years later, my misery level rose to be greater than my discomfort with religion level. And so I crawled back into the rooms and got some relief from my suffering. But over the course of about 6 months, again, was like, this is not for me. This is not what I believe. And so left again. And then another 6 or 7 years later, dragged myself in even sorrier shape and even more desperate. And this time, so far, it seems to have stuck, but not without a lot of agonizing over this question of, you know, whether I can be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and be an atheist slash agnostic. And I'll get to the distinction between those in a minute. And in fact, recently I was at a meeting with a friend of mine, and I was actually the speaker at the meeting. My friend was the secretary and asked me to speak. And this was, there were probably about 40 people in the room. And I shared it generally about my experience, strength, and hope. And part of it mentioned that I had this struggle with the issue of higher power and the semantics. And in the sharing after I spoke, someone actually said to me, I don't believe that you're sober because you can't be sober if you don't believe in God. And I said, well, I assure you I'm sober. You know, I don't know what to tell you. If that's your belief system, I'm obviously not going to, you know, I don't have the tools to unravel that. But, you know, again, I think that the issue is one that is for people who are uncomfortable with talk of God. I think it's one that's constantly in people's faces, and that it's important for those who. It was important for me to find a way that I could get comfortable with it in order to stay sober and stay a part of the program. And so I want to start by saying, you know, for me, you know, I could come here and say, my name is Kit, and I'm an alcoholic, and a magical unicorn saved my life, and you know, picked me up from the gutter and lifted me into the radiant heaven. And someone might say, well, Kit, that's very surprising to hear, because magical unicorns don't exist, and so we don't believe that a magical unicorn lifted you up into the heavenly sphere. And I would say, well, I belong to a fellowship that says that magical unicorn means whatever you want it to be. And so, you know, for me, magical unicorn means the Catholic god of someone else's child, you know, whatever. And that's sort of essentially what the program does. I appreciate that historically there was a bit of a battle about the Judeo-Christian God being the God of the program, and we, assuming that everybody in here has some questions about whether they're atheist or agnostic, that our side won that battle back in 1935, because the book says God of our understanding, and not capital G God, Christian God. That victory, which is, you know, it's represented a little bit in the big book, but after that, it's kind of people sweep it under the rug as much as they can. I don't think that that's a satisfactory answer to people who say, I don't believe in God, for people to say, well, God means whatever you want it to mean, therefore you must believe in God because it could mean a spoon, and there's a spoon on the table, you got to believe. You know, it's a semantic trick that doesn't actually address the question, which is, you know, when I hear people say God, I assume that they are talking about what our culture means by the word God, which is an omniscient, omnipotent, supreme being who created everything, the creator of everything, and the source of all moral authority in the universe. And that's something I don't believe in, and I've never believed in that, and I don't think I ever will believe in that. If you want to define God as, you know, whatever you want it to, you know, a group of orderly drunks, or, you know, grizzled old dyke, or, you know, good orderly direction, or any of those things, yeah, sure, I believe in God. I believe in all of those things. But that's not really getting to the issue, right? It's a bit of a trick. And so I don't find personally much comfort in the idea that God of my understanding somehow enables me to step into this sphere where I am among all of those who believe in God just because I've got some conception in my head that's not what you mean by God. And, you know, and similarly, when people stand up and say at meetings, you know, or they take a cake and they stand up and they say, you know, I want to thank my higher power, or I'd like to thank God for my sobriety, I have a very difficult time listening to that and believing that they mean Oprah or, you know, Congress or whatever they've decided that their higher power is, that is not a supreme deity, because it sounds to me like they're thanking a supernatural being who listened to their entreaties and came down and answered them. And as far as I'm concerned, if that's not what they mean, then the burden is on them to say some, to use some word other than God or higher power, right? So, but it quickly became clear to me when I came back into the program this time that I was going to need to stop fighting quite so much and stop struggling quite so much with it and stop feeling so alienated, because it was going to push me right back out. And you know, I was going to die. I believed I was going to die. I couldn't afford to be pushed back out. And so I first of all decided to just try to trick myself into believing that when people said the word God, that they meant something other than a supreme deity. And so people would say God, and I would try to convince myself that they were saying, you know, the Muppets or Bacon or whatever, you know, something awesome that they credited with their sobriety. And that actually, you know, for a while, that worked, that kept me there for a while. And then it sort of stopped working as I worked the steps more, because as you get into, if your sponsor likes to take you through the 12 and 12, there's a lot of stuff in the 12 and 12 of along the lines of we fully respect those who have a different path, and we think it's great if people don't believe in God, and you don't need to believe in God to be in this program, but we're really sure that once you've been in this program for about 20 minutes, you're going to see the light, and you're going to believe in God, the Father, the All-Superior, Supreme Creator, and you're going to fall on your knees, your employer, your boss, your father, your whatever. Yeah. And so every time I would be doing step work with my sponsor, I would say, I would just lose the focus on whatever else the message was supposed to be in those chapters or in that step work, because I was so offended by what I considered to be the real condescension inherent in particular in the 12 and 12. The big book has some of the problems, but the 12 and 12 is really grates on me. The big book has the most condescending chapter in the world, in history, the two agnostics and the or us agnostics, we agnostics, I can't remember, we agnostics, which says, well, you don't understand how electricity works, do you? So, but electricity is good, so therefore God exists. That didn't work for me. So at the end of the day, I'm not quite sure how I have come to reconcile my atheism with my participation in program. And some days it's really, some days I feel like it's like I know what I believe, and I believe in things that are greater than me. I believe in a lot of things, I believe in a lot of stuff that I can turn to as a source of mystery or awe or uncertainty or comfort or salvation, for that matter, that is not a supernatural deity. And on my good days, I can hold on to that and I can say, I know what I believe, and the program does not require me to believe anything else than what I believe. And I believe that that's true. I don't believe that I'm required to believe anything to participate in the program, but boy, there are an awful lot of people who are in the program who don't really hold fast to that and who don't have a lot of respect for people's differing beliefs. And, but as I said, on my good days, just knowing what I know and being comforted in my own sense of I guess what you'd call spirituality, is enough for me. On the days when it's not enough for me, which happen sometimes, they do, they sometimes with some frequency, lately less frequent. But when I really feel like I cannot tolerate being asked to say the Lord's Prayer one more time, I find different meetings, or I say it anyway and remember that since I don't believe there is no God, there's nobody to get mad that I'm saying ridiculous words to something I don't believe in. and for the most part, I think I rely on the one of the most important teachings of the program for me, which is to let go of the need to be right, and to let go of the pushback and the debating and the rigidity. And those are spiritual principles that have really, saved my life in a lot of contexts and a lot of other ways. Just being willing to, be the willow or the reed or whatever, bend with the wind, go with the flow, let other people do what they want to do and let other people believe what they want to believe. And, almost always the discomfort is that I experience is about, it manifests in narratives that I'm creating in my head about the dynamic that's going on between me and the group or me and these other people. And they're really it's more of just my thinking. It's stuff that's going on in my head. Nobody ever has actually said, you need to believe this, or, that one guy who said I wasn't sober if I didn't believe in God, but other than him, for the most part, I'm not being asked to do anything more offensive than standing silently while other people pray around me, or you know, holding hands while other people pray, or saying a prayer that I don't particularly believe in. And those are things that, although I find them galling, it's also, you know, I get a little bit like a dog with a bone. I want to hold on to it and shake it and chew it and win, you know, tug, make it a tug of war and win. And that is something that, thankfully, you know, the program teaches me I need to let go of, I can't do. And so, you know, I really believe that that we did win that battle. We control, we won the textual battle. In the authoritative text, we can point to the part where it says, you don't need to believe in the Judeo-Christian God in order to get sober, in order to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so we've got kind of the textual authority on our side. And as far as the practical problems that face us every day in meetings, as unsatisfactory as it is sometimes, I do find that the repeated acts of trying to relax and let it go and not get upset about things that are out there in the world that I disagree with and that I can't control is one that is very helpful for me to engage in. So that's all I got. Thank you. And now our second speaker, David Michael Barber.
Hi, my name is David B., and I'm an alcoholic. I have a lot of experience with sponsees who come into the program, especially in gay AA, that come in without a higher power. And I think it's because the very nature of being gay and lesbian in America is that you feel alienated from your family long before your family knows. You feel alienated from other people that are not gay and lesbian long before other people know. And you feel alienated from social structures like the other people in school and the other people in your religion. And a lot of religions do not look fondly upon our homosexual activity. So a lot of people in my experience come to me in the program and say, I'm trying to get sober, but I'm gay, and I used to have a religion and a God, and I don't have that any longer. You know, like, I drank it away. And some of us drank for lots of reasons, and some of us drank because we didn't have a God, some of us drank because, you know, a lot of other things, and God just wasn't in the picture. So then you come into AA, and you try to get sober, and there's two things you have to do in AA, is from my theory, is sort of you have to get sober, then you have to stay sober. It's sort of two steps of the big 12 steps. And I have had a lot of people come in and said, you know, I'm not ready to believe in anything yet. And I say, it's okay. You need to keep sober. Keep coming to our meetings and listen to what you listen to and hear what you hear and do what you can. And then I immediately take them to an agnostics meeting because there are Weak Gnostics meetings. And I will say that of the two texts that Alcoholics Anonymous has given us about agnosticism, Weak Gnostics, you're right, is not very helpful. Other than the fact that there's a chapter titled that, and then you feel like, well, they knew we were out there. I have a purview on that, but we'll go to the second one, which is Appendix 2. If you guys read Appendix 2, it's very helpful about sort of the whole idea of spirituality and what is spirituality and how do spiritual changes come about in your life. And Appendix 2 is very helpful when you're thinking about staying sober and not quite identifying what your higher power is, or there is no higher power. And I can do this with my sponsor and then my steps. I am the first person to say, whatever you need to stay sober, you should get, whatever that is. And I was lucky because, weirdly, I had left my old God 3 years before I got sober and gotten a completely different God. And I have a very non-standard God. I'm very pagan, and I believe in a female God. And if you ask me to define it any farther, I can't really go much farther because it's too big, it's too large, and it's about what I experience. It's not about what you experience in the universe. So I don't know that it has much meaning for anybody else, frankly. And I know a lot of people who are dedicated to the idea that you don't have to have a very defined higher power to get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you don't have to believe in God to stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've met plenty of people who go to meetings, they work their steps, they have a sponsor, and they stay sober for a very long period of time. I have 14 years and four months, and some of the people in our meetings have 35, 40 years. So it's possible to do. And I was recently reading a lot about sort of gay. There's a lot of literature now about gays and Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the chapters I read was about a man whose higher power was, and this is not demeaning, but his higher power was, the country singer, Dolly Parton. And he saw her as a figure of love, and that she was very accepting, and that all of her like songs were a sort of direction to him, and she was a guide to him in the way he behaved in his daily life. And I didn't think that was a bad idea at all. Lacking other direction, Dolly Parton's probably a very good higher power when you think about it. But I will tell you that there are quiet people who sit in the back of meetings all over the globe who don't come out to their groups as people who don't believe in God, and who don't stand up in, the Baptist church and shout, "I don't believe in God," in an AA meeting, because we just quietly slip into the meetings and we slip out of the meetings and we just don't identify, because it's sort of an outside issue and it's sort of not an outside issue. They put it in the big book, and because they put it in the big book, it's an inside issue. I have in the past gone to pagan meetings, and pagan meetings are great, but they can't be called Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. They have to be recovery meetings, because a religion, which is what they view paganism as, is an outside issue. So then we literally opened up our doors to anyone who identified as pagan and were working any sort of 12-step program. And that helped me for a while. I do go to a lot of agnostics meetings, and agnostics meetings are very welcoming to people who don't know who their higher power is, people who don't believe in God at all, people who are questioning, well, is there something or is there not something? And my point of view is that, let's say you're raised Southern Baptist, and you come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and you're a Southern Baptist, and your Southern Baptist God helps you every day stay sober. I'm really happy about that, but that is not going to happen for you perfectly as far as faith is concerned every day of every minute of every year that you're going to be sober. In my experience of Alcoholics Anonymous and my sobriety is that there's a good 5 or 10 minutes of every day I don't know what the hell I believe. I kind of get lost on the way to the bathroom sometimes, and I think, what the hell do I believe? And if I'm praying, where are my prayers going? So I think Bill really had the idea that because there was no perfect faith, we would always be in a moment occasionally when we would need the direction that they give agnostics or people who don't have a higher power yet. And there's a lovely book called Came to Believe, which helped me when I was very early on, because I thought, how can anyone who's trying to get sober connect with a higher power, and what would that be? And I think the worth of not being your own higher power is that you can't do it your way. And I think that's really what the book is about, is sort of like find something outside yourself that can help you stay sober, and it can't be you. It just can't be you, and it can't be another human. I've been very supportive of agnostics meetings, and I've gone to them a lot, and my sponsees have gotten a lot of direction there and time to consider what it is they believe. And some of them have come to believe other things. Some of them have stayed, not believing in a higher power at all. And as long as you're with other people in Alcoholics Anonymous that work the program you work the way you work it, it's helpful. So some of them have found sponsors in those meetings, and some of those people have found fellowship and support in those meetings. And those kinds of things are really invaluable to people who are trying to stay sober, trying to work the steps, trying to get, their daily lives taken care of. So I really advocate that people go to agnostics meetings just because of two things. One is there is no agenda there. You can just open up your mind and talk about it. And if it has to do with faith, they'll listen. And if it doesn't have to do with faith, they'll listen. But my experience of agnostics meetings is regular meetings sort of presuppose everyone in the room has a higher power already figured out. and they're practicing a religion that comforts them. And we don't have to talk about that. And we really don't have to talk about that. But Alcoholics Anonymous meetings that are dedicated to atheists and agnostics, people there talk more about their higher power than in any other meeting I go to, and or their lack thereof. And one woman in our meetings expounds weekly upon the cosmos and what has been found out about the cosmos and how the cosmos informs her sobriety. And it's fascinating. And I would never have thought about that sort of thing if had I not sat at this woman in the meeting. And sometimes I feel like calling her up in the middle of the week and say, what's going on out in the cosmos this week that's helping you? Because stuff helps her. You know, like she sees a nebulae and she thinks, wow, a nebulae. So they've always been really, really wonderful to me, the agnostics. And they have decided for the first time to have an international conference that's coming up this November, and it's going to be held in Santa Monica. And it was like, you know, it was like started like anything, six people over a coffee table. And then what happened was they sent out like sort of, we're going to do this, you know, like we need volunteers, we need people to help. So if you'd like to volunteer, there's a flyer here. And then if you just want information about it, there's a flyer with just the dates and the location. And the minute that they kind of said this was going to happen, they got deluged with people from Japan and people from France and people from Germany. And, oh, my gosh, we thought we were the only people who had agnostics meetings. There's a little church in like, North Carolina. All the meetings are religious. All the meetings are religious. And one of the guys said, I'm an agnostic. I'd like to start an agnostic meeting. So he wrote to us, and we gave him our format. And our format is really great. We don't pray at the end of the meeting. We say the Pledge of Responsibility, which is my hand must be out if you are looking for help in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the way we end the, you know, the meeting. We have our hands together and we say, it is my responsibility to reach out to other alcoholics. And we also read Appendix 2, which is really helpful to kind of like touch base with the meeting. And yeah, they wanted our format. So of course we gladly shared our format. And yeah, it was like the dawn was coming up for some of those people in North Carolina, because they thought that they were the only non-believers. And then the minute they had a meeting, there were eight other non-believers who came to their meeting. And I think one of the things that alcoholics struggle with the most is loneliness. And I think sometimes when Bill was writing the book, he thought, well, if there is no higher power, then they're all going to get really lonely, except for having other alcoholics to talk to. And I think that's one of the things that really helps with agnostics and atheists, if there are meetings where they can gather and if there are groups where they can get together and talk afterwards, because it's helpful. I know one man who has been sober for very many years, and he's a gay African-American man, and he came out of South Central, and a lot of the South Central meetings are organized sort of either for community centers or through churches. And he found after a while that he didn't have much in common with the alcoholics there, because they were all believing in some sort of God that fit in that community. And he came to gay meetings, and I guess he didn't really feel that included in gay meetings either. And I do think that because we're gay and lesbian, we do have sort of a more struggle with a higher power, the idea of a higher power, because so many of our like social structures came out of church, and we left our churches, and we left our communities. So I think it's really helpful, especially in early sobriety, to attend agnostics meetings and to see what's available there. Because I know, I don't think Alcoholics Anonymous is the only way. I mean, this is my personal opinion. I think I went to a meditation group once, and we were all meditating, and afterwards we were talking about our lives and what meditation did for us. And the man who ran the group was Buddhist, and he was sober many years. And I said, how did you get sober? And he said, through Buddhism. And I was fine with that. You know, I don't care how you get to the island. You should just get to the island. And, you know, whatever path you take is great. And whatever keeps you on the island is great. And I think not feeling lonely on the island is very important. So if you do have atheistic leanings, you have agnostic feelings, like me, I believe in paganism. And sometimes we just don't fit in other meetings. We gather together in these groups and exchange ideas. it feels lively. It feels like the old time Alcoholics meetings, Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and it's very supportive. And again, especially of younger people. So going back to the conference, we're doing work with other groups, and people are very opinionated, and they want the conference to go this way or that way. There's actually a couple of books that have been written about agnosticism and atheism inside AA. One is called Waiting. It's a book called Waiting, and it's about the search for a higher power and what if a higher power doesn't come, like doesn't come to you. So we're going to have that woman speak at the conference who wrote that book and talk about her experience, the 12 steps. And so we're doing all this work, and someone at the New York Times hears that there are atheists and Alcoholics Anonymous. No one ever heard about that before, I guess. And so the New York Times comes knocking on our door, and there is an article in the New York Times about, I want to say May, maybe April, about the group that meets in New York City, because there are meetings in New York City that are agnostics meetings. And so the writer had gone to one of them to experience what a meeting was like. And then they wanted sort of an opposite kind of opinion. So the woman who was organizing the conference on this coast talked about why she was having an international conference around this topic. And the smaller agnostics meetings in Los Angeles boomed. They just boomed. There was like 20 people more at every meeting because people had read the New York Times and had come looking for us. And so, again, I exhort you. I mean, we go to a lot of meetings. I do, in church basements and community rooms and stuff. But as much as you think there are people in the room that are all out of like conventional religions and all have a really tight higher power that they understand like the last, you know, fingernail of. There's a lot of people sitting around who aren't bringing their atheism forward, aren't bringing their agnosticism forward. And I think it's helpful for AA to support that portion of the fellowship too. There is a pamphlet coming. I don't know if you know about this, but there's a pamphlet about the second step coming, about finding a higher power. And there is going to be sections on atheism and agnosticism, and they're doing a lot of writing and rewriting to see what that will be. So if you're interested in that process, because some people are desperately interested in that process, there are literature committees, and there are GSR committees and kinds of things that are addressing that over the next like 2 years, I'd say, because there's a deadline for it. Then I would say dive in, because I know some people who are rabid about this issue and they want to make sure that the literature sort of lines up with the way they think about their modern AA activism and their beliefs. And I think that most people who were drinking and using, the first thing you realize is, oh, the sun is up and the ground is down. And then slowly you come to, I need a meeting. What are the steps? What are they talking about when they talk about the steps? And slowly you come to the idea that, oh, wait, I might have to struggle with what is this higher power thing? What is this God as I understood it? And if you feel more comfortable in agnostics meetings, then start there. And if you feel comfortable in regular meetings and you sit with the four agnostics you know about in the meeting, then start there. I think it's about turning it over. I think it's about having something other than yourself to refer to. And I will end with a little story you've heard before. I had a friend named Jim B, who is dead now. He was an older guy. And he came to me one day, and we were talking about, I go to agnostics meetings, and he said, oh, you know, I had a sponsee once. And I said, really? And he said, yep, Catholic priest. And I said, you were a sponsor for a Catholic priest? And he said, yes, I was. And he said, the Catholic priest kept praying to the Catholic God, and he could not stay sober. So Jim did what everyone suggests and told him to pray to the doorknob, because the doorknob would keep him sober. And the priest prayed to the doorknob, and he got sober. And I said, Jim, they tell that story all the time. You didn't know that guy, did you? And he said, yes, it happened to him and one of his sponsees. And I believed him. So just know that I am not in charge of your higher power in AA. You are definitely in charge of your higher power in AA and what you're turning it over to. And good counsel with your sponsor and good fellowship and people who think about these things to help you along. Very, very helpful. And if you want to come see me after, I'm happy to give you my number. Or there is a list of agnostics meetings in Los Angeles. I don't have a copy of it right now, but if you want one, I will make sure you get one. And again, there's a flyer for volunteering. If you want to volunteer for the international, I think they're calling it Free Thinkers, Free Thinkers Conference, Atheists and Agnostics in AA next November. I think it's the first weekend. It's like 4, 5, 6, or 5, 6, 7 in Santa Monica, so it's really close. 6, 7, 8. Then you can talk to me a bit about that, and if you want to know sort of where my favorite agnostics meetings are, I'll certainly direct you there. And if you just want to read a little bit about what the movement is, you can find that New York Times article from, I think it was March or April, pretty quickly if you put agnostics or atheist in AA into a browser. And I just want to thank David A. for asking me and Kit for turning up, because when David A. asked me, I said, well, you know, I sort of have a higher power, so I don't know if I can talk about this. And he said, you hang out with those people. Which I do. And I was hoping more of them would be here, but I was thinking that a lot of my friends who are agnostic are straight. There's a couple who are gay. And if you have problem sponsees and you want to send them to agnostics meetings, let me know and I can steer you towards a couple of meetings to send them to, because we are a very welcoming bunch. We are not the people who stand and say, no, 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 you can't come to our meeting. We are like, come in, sit down. So that's my experience, and I hope you have that experience if you go to We Agnostics meetings too. And thank you for letting me talk. Q&A now, right?
Yeah. All right. Okay, now we're going to open up the meeting for discussion. If you have a question, please come up here and ask, right? And it'll be question and answer. I've got one.
Okay.
I'm Darlene, an alcoholic.
Okay.
You know what? I am surprised I'm in this program, because the first sponsor I had was very Catholic, very religious. He says, you're not going to get sober unless you have a God. I said, Mary, it ain't going to happen. So, you know, I kept drinking for a few more years. And the only time I really felt free is when I would go to the meetings without this coach, you know, this sponsor, and just listen to people. And I have found other people in the program that are like me, who definitely are atheists, and we hate to even say the word God when we do the Serenity Prayer, you know, but it's kind of a cop-out not to say it. So I kind of do an underline, you know, when I say the word God, because I just don't feel comfortable. And I'm wondering, why do we need a spiritual leader, you know? Because I feel spiritual without a higher power. I don't know about everybody else, but I feel like I feel like I fit in the world. The world is good to me. I'm good to the world, you know, and I think that's spirituality. So I don't know. What do you guys do when you're told you've got to?
Thank you. Great question. So I agree with you. I don't think there needs to be a God in order for there to be sober people or Alcoholics Anonymous. I do think, as David was saying, that the concept of a higher power that's not you is an exceptionally useful one. Taking control, you know, taking oneself out of the driver's seat and turning it over to something else is a very useful exercise. And I found that it's very useful even if there's Jesus take the wheel. Well, Jesus isn't there, but it doesn't really matter, you know. It's still better to say, I surrender, I can't do this, you take it, without any understanding whatsoever of what or who you is. Essentially, I think a psychological exercise to help us get out of our own way. And you know, in terms of the practical aspects, I should say, you know, when my sponsor told me, get on your knees every morning and pray, I said, okay, and got on my knees every morning and prayed. And sometimes I tell my sponsees to do that as well. And I don't see, I think that there is a tendency of people as a group to maybe come across as being more unified or consistent in their beliefs than any individual people are. If you sit them down and say, what's your higher power? What do you believe in? A ton of people say, oh, I don't really know. I don't really sure. I'm not really sure. I'm not really comfortable. I don't know. But somehow when you put them all into a meeting and to put the steps up on the wall, they're suddenly, you know, born again. So I think that what you have is clearly enough to keep you sober. I don't think anybody needs anything more than a sense that they are okay in the universe, you know. And then there's some of the stuff that the steps teach are useful exercises to help us get out of our own way and shouldn't be cast aside too lightly, even, you know, in my case, if I find myself on my knees next to my bed at my sponsor's direction, saying things to a entity that I don't believe in, it still actually turns out to be kind of helpful in setting the direction for my day, and so I do it anyway, you know.
One of the things that has always helped my program has been honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And I think we have to have open-mindedness about ourselves and what might be occurring out there in our world. And I think sometimes people who don't decide on a higher power are somehow more keyed in than other people who decide it's X and then use X. I have heard about those sponsors that say, we're working your third step. Kneel with me in the parking lot at Denny's. And I don't know about the rest of you, but I would run out of that parking lot so quickly. Like, and I like Denny's. I like the bacon higher power. That was very interesting to me. And Muppets and bacon. I thought Miss Piggy might qualify for both. no, but without being flip. There was one man who stood up and said, clearly in his early sobriety, the LAPD was his higher power because they stopped him, they took over his life, and he lived with them for 5 or 6 years as a result of his drinking and using. And he said after that, you know, it became different. But for the first while he was sober, the LAPD was clearly a higher power. And he didn't have a problem with that. Like, he thinks they're great people. So, you know, it just depends on what your experience is and that kind of stuff. But I do think you have to be honest and you have to be open-minded and you have to be willing. Like, I've never prayed on my knees that I can think about. But I do think that prayer is helpful because it's asking for help in a way when, like, I've been in situations where there's no one to ask for help or there's no real help available. I got really horribly ill on a flight once in mid-flight, and I went to the stewardess and I said, what do you got? And she said, we're not allowed to give medications to passengers, pretty much. She's like, if you have it, you can take it, but we're not allowed to administer it. I'm like, okay, fine. So I went back to my seat and I thought, this is just going to be 8 hours of pain because I was stuck on this flight. And I prayed, make it different. I just paid, you know, I didn't even know what I was praying to, but I said, make it different. And I fell asleep and slept for like 6 hours and woke up when the plane touched ground. And that was an experience of me not knowing what my higher power was, but it was obviously working for me. And I think the importance of prayer is asking for help. Like, whatever it is that you're asking is not material. And I think the early AAs knew that. They just knew that they had to get you into that groove of asking other people for help when other people could be of help. And when there was no one around for help, like, I have a lot of sick relatives at times. And, you know, you go to the hospital, what can you do? You're going to sit there for 4 hours. I pray for help. You know, I don't know where it's going. I don't know where it's coming from. They've done studies where, like, if someone asks for prayer for their aunt and 20 people pray, the aunt gets 20% better than other aunts who aren't prayed for. And I don't know what that's about. And I think that sometimes putting an intention out helps whatever that is happen. And so sometimes I'm in that situation where I just put an intention out. One of the things I do mostly in meetings is when other people are sharing about their lives is I say, help them. You know, I almost never say, help me. When I was sick, I said, help me. But I often, like, you know, someone's complaining about this or that, and I say, help them. And I just let it go, you know, wherever it goes, however it comes back, I don't care. I just kind of, I'm now thinking about others more than I think about myself, which is part of what the Big Book exhorts us to do, is to not always be alcoholically focused on what's happening right here. So that's my experience with this kind of issue. And I do think that, you know, whatever you're comfortable with, stay with. And like I said, people who say you can't stay sober, they're wrong. I know people who've been sober for 33 years. They'll be sober for 34, you know, with any luck. And so to me, one of the things that I like about Alcoholics Anonymous is other people's experience in the program inspires us. And I think that's really helpful. And so if you are the only alcoholic agnostic in the room or the only alcoholic atheist in the room, find another. And, you know, we can help each other. And I think it is trickier without, like, I don't know, without an easily appended higher power. But I think that it's worth the journey. To take the journey, because I think you're right, the journey of spirituality is more important to us than any title or concept that someone else is going to give you about your experience of spirituality.
Louis, alcoholic. I'm really sorry I was late. But Kip, I got the feeling that you're atheist.
Yes.
And you have a little bit of a higher power. No, I respect that, because I'm agnostic, and I was a believer, but I'm agnostic now, and I'm a little less agnostic than I was 6 or 7 months ago. My question is, was there ever a time both of you were believers, or did you come to the fellowship and just be agnostic and atheist from the beginning? Because I started out a believer, and now I'm agnostic. And I for some reason I can't make sense. I can't allow myself to be atheist because of certain events that I'm choosing to call a God or a power greater than myself. So. Sure.
So, thank you. So, the format asks us me to repeat the question back so that it can be taped. So, the question is: Have I or we always been atheist or agnostic, or did we at some time believe? You know, I was raised without structured religion, and my parents are both academics and scientists, and so they were kind of empiricists and kind of looked down on people who believed in God. And in my earlier days of sobriety, in furtherance of my effort to be honest, open-minded, and willing, I tried to be willing to change my lack of belief in a supreme being. And part of that was becoming willing to engage in what I now think is really a pointless exercise. Are we locked in? There you go. the exercise of calling, of taking that whatever it is I believe and attaching the label God to it and then talking about God as if it meant something. And so I did talk about my belief in God, but it was not talking about a supreme deity. And so, you know, I think for me, the answer is I've always been agnostic. I call myself an atheist reluctantly. I'm not on a campaign to convince anybody that there is no God or anything. I don't care what anybody else believes. It's more, I guess, because I reject intellectually the notion that there is an omniscient, omnipotent, supreme, supernatural being. And my belief system does include things that are beyond the human eye, you know, and I think many people's does, but it just doesn't include Dad in the sky. And, you know, I should say, I think that in my experience, alcoholics and addicts are spiritual seekers almost across the board, and even the most atheistic agnostic ones are people who deeply want meaning, you know, want to find meaning and want to make their lives meaningful. And because of that, I think a lot of people, when they're fed the idea that God will give your life meaning, they are so anxious to feel meaningful that they grab onto that. And I think that's fine. You know, I think I prefer to get my meaning from trying to be, you know, useful to my fellows and being the hand of AA and all of that stuff, rather than from someone in the sky. But I do support anybody's effort to find meaning in their own lives or in the universe. I wouldn't put anybody down for that.
I will say my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous is that not too many atheists or agnostics go around saying, hey, what about you with your damn religion? It's always the other way around, like, you without your religion, what are you doing? I will tell you that I've always thought of myself as sort of a mystic, because I feel like whatever it is happens to me. Does that make any sense to you? Like, I don't need to go to somebody else. Like, to me, the priest was a very odd thing in Catholicism. Like, you go there and you talk to him and God works through the priest. Like, no. I want to call the man himself. If there's really a man up there, like, I want the red phone. I want to pick up the red phone. I want him to pick up the red phone. No, but in my life, I think the way spirituality works in my life is something happens and I realize it was a spiritual moment. And my experience of that is very personal, and it's very deep. And when it happens, I'll tell you, it happened when my aunt died. She looked at me, and then she looked out the window, and then she was gone. And nothing in my experience told me how to process that. It was a completely unique event. And did I want it to have meaning? Yes. And did it have meaning? Yes. Was there a God involved? I don't know. I don't know if there was a God involved. I don't even know if my higher power was there. I think most likely her higher power was there at that moment. And I've always sort of thought of myself as a mystic. When my friends ask me, what is AA and how does it work? I say, American secular mysticism. We don't tell you what to believe. We just tell you it started in Ohio. We don't care what your religion is, and you got to believe something. That is as close as it gets to me describing to outside people what I feel happens with me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have seen other things happen for other alcoholics that make me think they have higher powers and their higher powers looking after them. But that's only, like I said, like third or fourth hand viewing. So I can only talk about my experience and what I feel happens. And again, if you gave me a pen and a pad, I'd be like, what? A pen and a pad? Come on, this isn't enough for me to describe what's going on here. So that's sort of where I come from. And I kind of shoehorn my belief into paganism because it's the closest thing I've found, more or less. And it's a shoehorning is what it is. I kind of tuck it in, try to make it fit. Next question. We have another 5 minutes.
I'm Sally, alcoholic.
Hi, Sally.
I'm not struggling with the higher power. I mean, I reconciled years ago that there isn't one. You know, and talk about blessing. But I'm curious, what do you two do about the 11th step? I mean, that totally eludes me in terms of, you know, an AA program. Because, I mean, it's sitting there, it's in the steps, and yet it sort of involves something supernatural.
The question is, without a belief in a higher power, how do we deal with the 11th step? So I just leave, I just cut out the with God part. I mean, so I'm all for meditation. I think meditation is great. I am less rigorous about it than I should, but I have the common alcoholic's noisy chatterbox brain. And so it's good exercise for me to try to be still and to quiet that thinking down, and there doesn't, I mean, this, being present and silent and mindful doesn't require any higher power to be anywhere at all. And the prayer, you know, I can engage in prayer-like activities, or you can call it prayer, I guess, without having an addressee in the addressee box, And it's the Dear Santa letter. You know, I can make my list and send it, even if I don't think Santa's going to answer. And that work, you know, that's enough. That works for me. That's enough. So I don't know about anybody else.
I love this question. I think I heard recently an AA share that the way she meditates is, my mind is full of crappy stuff. So what she does every morning is she opens up the top of her head and she lets all the bad thoughts float out of her head. And she keeps the top of her head open until all the bad thoughts that are trapped in her head are gone and her head is empty. Then she closes the top of her head and her meditation is done. And I thought that was really great because the alcoholic head's always full of all this stuff. And I'm like, well, how long do you meditate? Like, but she says it gets easier if you do it frequently. But I thought that was a lovely meditation. And, you know, did the thoughts go anywhere? I don't know. And then, yeah, I do think that the alcoholic mind has all this stuff that rolls around in it. And I do think that, you know, writing things down helps us. And I know people without a thought about really who their higher power is who use a God box, because the problem gets down the arm and into the ink and on the paper, and then you put it away in the box over here, and then it's gone from your head, which is very helpful for alcoholics. It's why we write most of the time. When my sponsor says write, he just wants it out of my head, because if it's out of my head, someone else or something else can think about it tomorrow, and I can sleep tonight. So some of the stuff, while it's aimed at spirituality, is helping us build other things, like asking for help is a good thing for alcoholics. And whether you ask your next door neighbor or you ask, you know, a higher power, wherever you're asking, it doesn't matter. It's sort of like, who cares who the addressee is? You just, the fact that you are now willing to be humble and ask for help helps us in our daily lives. And I think Bill knew that.
Well, thank you. Oh, yes, sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Hi, I'm Osvaldo, and I'm an alcoholic. You know, I really liked this workshop. It really cleared up a lot of my conceptions of a higher power. And like you guys, I read the We Agnostics chapter, and I just came out really confused. I've already read it 3 times. So I'm glad that you guys actually said that. So my question to you guys is, being an agnostic, because I don't really believe in God anymore. I was raised with the Catholic God, punishing God, and I kind of now believe in the universe, the sun, the rain, things that are higher than me that I can't control. So is that basically what an agnostic is, as far as to an atheist is? So you guys can explain that.
There are two different kinds of atheists. There are the positive atheists and the negative atheists. The negative atheists take the position that they do not believe in a God because they have not seen the evidence for there to be a God. Positive atheists assert affirmatively that there is no God. Agnostics say, I don't know. I don't know whether there's a God or not. So that's sort of the traditional divides. And yeah, that's, you know, that's the bigger thing than me too, is everything, you know, everything's bigger than me. Well, that works. So.
Yeah, that's a good word.
Yeah.
One more, I just have to say it. The nation was founded by men who believed God had made a really wonderful watch and then he died or went away. And it's called deism. And the watch continues to function. And so when people get on their high horse in America and they say, the founding fathers believed, just say deism. That's all they believed was deism. The watch continues to tick. So that's a helpful American concept if you need that.
Today I seek the serenity, and
he
goes on. And,
oh, I like that.
For me.
Let's
and
use
I
that.
Like the concept of the serenity prayer, but I don't want to beg God for it.
Let's use that. I think that's excellent. I'm sorry, that's all the time we have. The AALA program and executive committees would like to thank you for attending this workshop and hope you enjoy the rest of the weekend as we fellowship of the Spirit. After a moment of silence, please join me in the we version of the Serenity Prayer. That's what it says. I'm supposed to follow the format.
This recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.